Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com.
These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL Podcast. I'm Connor Orr. That's Albert Breer. Somewhere above me are the very nice, hardworking people who are fixing our house. So don't mind the occasional saw and hammer banging here. But Albert is in Foxborough, which is an appropriate place for us to start. There was a lot of big games this weekend, and this was nowhere close to the game of the weekend, but I do think it's the most consequential. The Patriots lost to the Saints 34-0. Now, I gotta find my disturbing facts to make sure I have them all correct, but this is the worst shutout loss of the Belichick era, the second worst shutout loss in Patriots history. It's the first time in the entire history of the Patriots organization that they lost back-to-back games by 34 or more points. First time in the Robert Kraft ownership era that they've lost two games by 30 points or more in a season. Albert, I know that Kraft has made a career out of not making flashpoint decisions, not reacting, not, you know, basically being the antithesis of, let's say, the Woody Johnsons and some of the other owners in his division. However, this feels like a massive flashpoint moment for the Patriots. Bill Belichick said that they need to start over yesterday, and we're 5 weeks into the season. I'll just put it on your plate.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
Well, you know, part of the discussion here over the last week was a couple of the big losses they've had in the past. And I don't know if you remember, like, the 2014 loss on the Monday night to Kansas City where Brady got benched. And then in 2003, they cut Lawyer Malloy and played the Bills like a week and a half later. The Bills signed Lawyer Malloy, and the Bills beat the Patriots 31-0. And I can just remember being here for those two. Those were big, like, what is wrong with the Patriots moments. In 03, it was the 2001 Super Bowl championship just a fluke? And in 2014, it was, is the Patriot dynasty dead? And in both cases, they came back the next week and won big. In 2003, they beat the Eagles 31-10. And then in 2014, they came back and famously beat the Bengals. I'm the on to Cincinnati guy that got scolded by Bill in that press conference. They beat the Bengals 43-17. And both those teams went on to win championships. And so, you know, I think, like, the way that the Belichick Patriots have always reacted in these situations is instructive now. Because we've always seen almost this FU to overreaction in these sorts of situations where they lose in a really ugly fashion. And we have never seen this before, where they lose consecutive games like this. They lose a game in a really bad way and they don't respond in a positive way whatsoever. Team looked lifeless, Connor. I mean, I've been telling people for the last month, and you and I have talked about this, that the talent I don't think is good enough. And I think this is, the roster's eroded to a point where you can barely name a single player on that roster where you can say, yeah, that guy will be here in 5 years, a single guy. Right. Like, and so that's a problem, but this, like, sort of, like, almost goes beyond that, because this looked like a team yesterday that felt like it had no chance. And I just think you can take some of the clips and how lifeless they looked, you know? And I think that's something that, especially in football, like, that's visible. You know what I mean? Like, don't you know? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yes.
It's like,
yes.
It's visible. Like, when a team just almost looks like it doesn't want to be there. And that's the way I felt watching the Patriots yesterday. And, you know, I just sort of wonder, where all of this goes from here. Because they have the Raiders this week, and they'll have the Raiders on a short week. And that's coming off of the debacle last year. You remember how they lost the Raiders with the Chandler Jones situation, right?
Yep.
And then they have the Bills after that. And, you know, it's like last week felt like a crossroads for the organization. And it's like almost like the crossroads went the wrong way. And now there's almost like another crossroads.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, like, is it really like time, like beyond just like, does this team have life for 2023? Now it's like, we already know it sort of, this season isn't going the right way. Does it lead to like some really harsh realities, you know? And I mean, there's no getting around it. Like they look like one of the worst teams in the league yesterday, no question.
To me, the emblematic play from that game that showed a team that didn't want to be there was they kind of were setting up on a 3rd and 1 to run the tush push. And then all of a sudden they pitched it back to Ramondre yep. Stevenson, and Mac Jones just fired it toward, you know,
way too far inside.
Way too far inside toward midfield. Cam Jordan jumps on it. By that point, it's already 21-0. And this is to start this is your drive to start the second half. And say what you will, but you always give Belichick the benefit of the doubt and you say, all right, well, this, you know, these guys are coming out of half. Belichick's still a great coach. They'll adjust. Bill O'Brien, all this stuff, they'll make it work. And then, you know, I don't know who that's on necessarily, but that is the sort of play that you look at and you say, okay, this team is just done. They're cooked. And here's what, you know, my thought is that I would guess that this week, in concert with last week, is probably the point in time where if you're Belichick, you probably have to realize, or that someone has to realize for you, that your roster building strategy is no longer viable in the NFL. The idea of building a true middle class roster, which is what they did throughout the 20 years of the dynasty, right? Having the central part of the roster being experienced veteran players capable of quote unquote doing your job, that's no longer enough right now. And what we're seeing right now is the top of the NFL is so loaded with veteran and young talent, and it's almost an embarrassment of riches if you look at the Eagles, the 49ers, some of these teams where that's how you win right now. And I know that sounds obvious to accumulate talent, but you have to accumulate an embarrassing amount of talent. And when you think that you have enough, you have to get even more. When you have Jalen Waddle, you have to get Tyreek Hill. When you have Fletcher Cox, you have to get Jalen Carter. It has to be so much better than you already think it is.
When you have Nick Bosa, you have to get Javon Hargrave.
Yes, you know? Exactly. Right. Because and I'm looking at when Tom Brady left New England right there, right? And you and I did a podcast about this, right? They could have bottomed out and gotten Trevor Lawrence, okay? That was one direction. And then you could have ended up with a Trevor Lawrence maybe 1 year, a Micah Parsons with 1 year. You could have had a couple of those years where you have you be bad for just a little bit, and then you build off of those core generational talents. Or you could do what the Buccaneers or the Rams did, and you could really start pilfering free agency. The Patriots did neither of those. I mean, they were aggressive in 2020, COVID free agency, because I think there were some economic advantages to that. Right. You know, the Matthew Judon signing was one of the best signings that we've seen maybe in the last decade in terms of free agency, but they stopped. I mean, that was it. You know, Nelson Aguilar.
They struck out. See, that's the problem, though, is like that year in free agency, they tried to get cute and hit on a bunch of middle-class guys.
Yep.
And like they took swings on – and this is a whole overarching thing to me, okay? So, like, number one, it's for years we were told they were sacrificing on talent in the name of culture, okay? So, on paper, what you're doing is you are sacrificing on talent for a team that's going to be smarter than everybody else, it's going to play harder than everybody else, that's going to win on the margins like everybody else can. And now it looks like they're neither. You're untalented, and like you tell me where the culture was yesterday. You know what I mean? You tell me, like, because that's where a culture should show up, right? Like, if we have to hear until they're blue in the face about the culture, well, like, isn't that exactly the spot where your culture shows up after you get your ass kicked in Dallas? Like, your culture should show up, and it didn't show up at all. So that's number one. Number two, to me, like, I had somebody who was in this division say to me that it's almost like Belichick's winning, fighting his last war. And I guess it's like some historical reference that I'm not smart enough to get. But the idea is that he has this way of building that he's really set on doing it that way, right? And he is fighting the last war of building that way and trying to show you can still build that way when everybody else is already like way over here, you know? And I think it's what you're getting at exactly, which is like teams are being built differently now. And he's still building as if he has Tom Brady. Like that's what the middle class signings are on offense, right? Like that's what it is. It's like all Tom Brady needed was like, and look, Tom Brady has some great players too. Like, so they don't have a Gronkowski on this team either. You know what I mean? Like, so that's part of it, certainly. But Brady, like really what Brady needed was five guys who could stay alive on any route. It's like, I can make it work if I've got five guys who are going to be where I need them to be on every route, right? So you're still building that way where you think, okay, we just need a bunch of middle-class guys and we'll have the quarterback work it out. Your quarterback isn't Tom Brady anymore. And then they go and they get Trent Brown and Riley Reiff and all these spare parts to play tackle for them. Okay, Dante Scarnecchia will figure that out because he's the guy who turned like a college wrestler into a Pro Bowler at guard, right? Dante Scarnecchia is not there anymore. So he's still building the team in a way that worked 10 years ago because A, the environment of the NFL was different 10 years ago. And B, like was based so much on these tent poles that he had, these people that he had. It wasn't just the program, it was these people that he had, and he doesn't have those people anymore. And I think it should like actually increase our respect for people like Brady, for people like Scarnecchia, for people that were real champions of the way he did things, because he had these flag bearers in the program. And, you know, I think I could even look at it as like, is losing like a Devin McCourty, like the bottom falling out, you know what I mean?
Yeah. All you have is Matthew Slater.
Right. And I mean, all due respect for Matthew Slater, there are a few players well, I've covered in 20 years of doing this that I have more respect for than Matthew Slater, but he is some 23-year-old hotshot and listen to the guy who's been covering kickoffs for 15 years as the sole flag bearer of the program.
Right.
I mean, you know, like that's what it is now. And, you know, I think it's, I'm pretty certain of this, like Robert Kraft's doing some soul searching today on what he's going to do with his football team. I think it's a difficult spot to be in, and you sort of wonder what the next step's going to be. Is it a house cleaning? Is it a restructure? Is it, well, let's give him one more shot? I'm not sure what Robert will do here.
My guess is, I mean, to put a bow on this and then we'll move to the next one. I think a lot of Patriots fans right now are wondering what do you think? What is your best guess? I don't know about you, but my best guess is, he absolutely comes back next year. I don't think that there's any doubt in my mind that he gets a chance to fix it. Now, my problem is that I think his insistence on building this way has been so ingrained for so long that there is no chance. Like, there's nothing you could do in one offseason to catch yourself up to where anybody else is right now, unless you somehow, like, you know, had the Secret Service fly you and Josh Allen to Guam in the offseason and you hatched a plan to get Allen to quit the Bills and then come on your rock. Like there's no other way you would have like this offseason.
Guam's an interesting location.
Guam, you know, yeah. Is that's a U.S. territory, isn't it?
I think so. So you wouldn't need passports for that one.
Wouldn't need passports. I know Belichick's got some of the, probably military little, black ops connections.
Maybe a little harder for other people to track too if it's domestic.
Yes, like there's not you're not going to be able to use Kraft's plane the flight tracker. Yeah. Let's see, Guam. I'm just Googling where Guam is.
I believe it's U.S. territory.
It's
right?
Out there.
It's way out in the South Pacific, isn't it? Near like I want to say it's near like near like Tahiti and that like all of that, isn't it?
The Northern Mariana Islands, Palau, Micronesia, Papua New Guinea. It's like you got to go to the Philippines and then bang a right.
Wow, so it's closer to like Asia than it is to North America.
It's like yeah, or you go to Tokyo and then you just have to swim straight south for like probably days. Did you ever do that? Like,
if you're a strong swimmer,
did you ever do that? Like during COVID, I found a lot. I was just looking at Google Maps, and you would just like you would wonder what it would be like to just go to like Japan and then swim. You definitely die. There's no possible way you'd survive. Swim from like Tokyo to Guam. But like how wild that would be, that would fire you up.
Probably be in good shape at the end of it.
Yeah. I mean, anyway.
They say swimming is the best exercise, right?
They do. It's boring though. I had to do it.
It is.
I had to do it.
Well, the problem is you can't like listen to music or anything, you know?
Yes.
Or like podcasts like this one.
So my wife is a really talented swimmer and I bought her a waterproof iPod Shuffle, and which is a thing. It exists. But then,
oh, it does.
Yeah, it does. But the problem is now whatever's on that thing is on that thing forever because you can't go back through iTunes. Like all the dongles and the cords, you know, there's just – and I think it's like Whitney Houston's greatest hits. I think that's what's on there. And so, I mean, I have all the respect in the world for Whitney Houston, but, I mean, that's not getting me through an hour swim, you know?
Swimming is boring. And I remember there was one point, like, you know, we have a pool at our club and I was like, hey, maybe I'll start swimming. And you're right. I thought it'd be fun, you know, cause you kind of associate swimming with fun. Swimming laps is not fun.
No. And at ours, like, I mean, at the YMCA that I go to, you have to share lanes.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I don't know the rules and, you know, there's some Iron Man next to me just like banging out, you know, 30 second laps. And, you know, I feel like a boat in a storm, you know, you're just like getting rocked everywhere. But, yeah. You know, you and I are both runners who are facing the reality that we can't do this for the rest of our lives, but would like to remain healthy.
True.
And swimming feels like... Something feels like our only option.
The Peloton's not a bad option. I will say that. Although we have to, ours is broken right now. So I've had to use that one at the club too, which is kind of a pain in the ass because you have to time out when you get there to try to make sure that nobody's, because there's two of them, you know? Mm. And so it's always like a dice roll whether or not like one of them is going to be open.
That's true. Yeah.
Probably a better idea for me just to get the one in my house fixed.
Get the one in your house fixed and then get somebody to Guam. So, because that's the, you know, we have to keep tabs on this inevitable.
Okay. So we were sending Bill and Robert and Josh Allen to Guam.
I mean, that's the only thing that they could do this offseason to make them competitive next year, in my mind, is to trade for Patrick Mahomes. Like there's no other option for me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, what else is there? Because the talent deficit, and you know, you had some really interesting quotes in your MMQB column, which I encourage everybody to read. The talent deficit is so severe in this situation that I don't see. I mean, it's going to take 3 or 4 years, and what do you do about that?
I mean, and that's the thing is, like, I look at like even the Jets, right? Forget about the Dolphins and Bills. Like, look at the Jets in their own division. Like I can name a half dozen guys in the Jets roster that I think will be there in 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, Sauce Gardner, Garrett Wilson, Quinnen Williams, Oliveira Tucker, you know, like there are guys there where it's like, okay, like I know that guy's going to be there in 5 years. And that to me is like the central thing with New England right now is like they, and I wrote a story on this 3 or 4 years ago, and I think it's really interesting. It's like, there was a point where Bill was able to build for his schedule, which was such a luxury. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
It's like, okay, so we're playing the NFC North this year. So that means we're going to be playing against Calvin Johnson and Devontae Adams. And so we need bigger corners. So we're going to go get Darrell Revis. You know what I mean? Like, and they would be able to build this way. They'd be able to have that carrot of chasing a championship. And they were able to kind of use draft picks to, like get guys who could do very specific things, you know, and spend whatever it is, a fifth round pick on a long snapper. And they're still doing those things, but they're doing those things without like the foundation. And so what you just end up doing is having a bunch of guys who like, you can only use one way that aren't great football players, you know? And so I don't know what the answer is here. My guess would be, Connor, and this is just a guess, I think Bill's back in 2024. I would not be surprised if Robert tries to force some sort of restructuring, because the restructuring is coming, right? Like whoever the next coach is, I think it's going to be Gerard Mayo, won't have the power that Bill has, because no coach has the power that Bill has anymore. Even like Sean Payton doesn't have the power that Bill has, you know, where Bill is like the sort of the omnipotent guy. Is that right? Omnipotent guy atop the organization. That doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
And so like, does Robert say, instead of waiting until Bill's gone to do the restructure and to change the way that everybody, the reporting works and all of that, right? We're going to do the restructure now. So I'm going to go bring in, say, John Robinson, who was here before, who's the old Titans general manager, and he's going to be the GM. And you know what, Bill? You're not going to answer to him, but he's also not going to answer to you.
Right.
He's going to report to me. And the risk in doing that, of course, is that Bill walks. The other thing that makes this awkward, he's 18 wins away from Shula, or 18 wins away from passing Shula, 17 wins away from matching him. Everybody here thought, okay, so like he'll get there at some point in 2024 and then we'll see. Will he? I mean, 18 wins now. I mean, like to get 18 wins over the next 2 years now, like that means a winning record in both seasons. I don't know that he's getting there.
So you go to Las Vegas this week,
yep.
Then Buffalo, mm-hmm. at Miami, the Commanders, the Colts, the bye week, right. The Giants, the Chargers, the Steelers, the Chiefs, the Broncos, the Bills, the Jets. I don't know. I mean,
it softens a little. Yeah,
it softens up a little. And so I don't know. Maybe you get 6 or 7 wins out of this year. I mean, I don't know. That would be a lot, though. I mean, you'd have half, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So if you get 6
then you'd
more
have to win wins. 10 next year.
If you get 6 more wins, that's the thing. Yeah. So if you get 6 more this year, that means next year you'd have to have 12 to pass Shula. And how awkward is that if you hang on to him for an extra year and then he's like 1 win short of Shula? You know what I mean? Although like that's the thing is like, that's what you have to consider with all of this is that, you know, it's if it all becomes about the record, are you throwing away seasons, you know? And I don't know, like I'm old enough to remember the end of Shula and how awkward that was in Miami. And they were still pretty good. They had Marino and everything. And I just sort of remember how Jimmy Johnson was hovering over that thing for 2 years, you know? And, you know, it just feels like this is obviously very different because there's no one hovering over the job the way Jimmy Johnson was hovering over that job. But it does feel like however this ends, it could be awfully awkward.
Last point for me is just Gerard Mayo has been hovering over this job. I mean,
sort of, yeah. I mean, but at least
he's declining opportunities. You know, he's not going anywhere. And I don't know. I mean, I do. I think that they've been talking, you know, I feel like every time you ask about that guy, it's always like, yeah, it's probably going to be the guy, you know?
Yep. Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, I think Kraft certainly has a mirror mark to be the next guy. So, you know, I that part of it, yeah, that's there. I mean, the one difference is like that obviously Bill has a great relationship with Gerard, and Bill can like take credit for Gerard. You know what I mean? Whereas
sure.
like the Shula Johnson dynamic was much, much different than that.
Yeah. All right. I can hear you all out there. You're just like, goodness gracious, 20 minutes on the Patriots. They're terrible. I well, I picked them to win the AFC, so I have to come out.
This is a landmark thing, though.
It is a landmark thing. I feel like it's a big deal.
Some people who are listening to this might not remember the Patriots before Belichick. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's you like, millennials.
I mean, really, like, honestly, like, I hope we have that audience. That'd be awesome, you know? But there might be some people out there that are listening to us that, like, do not remember the Pete Carroll Patriots, you know? Kind of like, you know, I mean, you know, Shula for me, like, was like, oh, my God, like, that's one of my dad's coaches. You know what I mean? Like, that's like that's not even my era, you know? Same thing with Belichick. The idea that somebody like that could be gone is I think, worthy of 20 minutes on a Monday podcast in week 5.
I agree. I remember being in the Patriots locker room after some time that they beat the Jets in some consequential game in the early 2010s, and Charles Barkley was there, and I'm pretty sure he had a lot to drink, and people were interviewing him, and he just said, I wrote it. I have to check the exact quote, but it was something to the effect of like, I want to talk to all the Patriots fans out there. You guys know your team is going to suck ass when Bill Belichick and Tom Brady leave, right? And he's like, you should be enjoying this more. But it's true. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Now we may be reaching that point. From one disappointing blowout loss to another, we go to Sunday Night Football. Dallas, yep. San Francisco. Wow. I mean, this was as big of a muscle flexing by a top-tier team in the NFL that we've seen all year. The 49ers just bludgeoned Dallas home. It was a complete dismemberment.
I think of like, Doug LaMaurice has a podcast, an Ohio State podcast that I've listened to forever. And he does some national stuff now too. And, he had this term for Alabama, the way that they would just squeeze the life out of teams when they were really rolling under Saban. He called them the Alabama Death Star. I feel like this is like sort of what the Niners are now. Like,
we're getting close.
It's just like it. Well, it just feels like this game, the Steeler game, like when they turn it on, it's like inevitable. It feels like inevitable what's happening. You know what I mean? Like, and there's no stopping it. And they're going to put their foot on your throat, and you may flex a little bit and squirm a little bit, but eventually they're going to choke you out, you know? And it's, I guess the best way to like describe what I'm seeing is it's a suffocating amount of talent. It's just
really
players freaking everywhere, you know? And it's like exactly what you said off the top here, right? It's like they had Nick Bosa and Fred Warner in their front seven and Eric Armstead, and they go and get Javon Hargrave. In their skill group, they had Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel and George Kittle, and they get Christian McCaffrey. In their secondary, they had Tre'Davious Ward, who was the best DB on the Chiefs roster a couple of years ago. It feels like they don't have holes. And the injury bug strikes everybody, so that could change over time, you know? But, I mean, everybody wants to talk about the quarterback, and I understand that. But this is a team that's so well-rounded that they don't need him to be great. You know what I mean? Like, and he looks awesome.
He does hook on. Like, that's that is the one thing that I don't understand about this entire debate is the only reason, if you were to completely mind erase everybody, Men in Black style, and then just bring every fan into the NFL completely wholly new. Look at Brock Purdy's like back foot touchdown pass to George Kittle last night to put them up 28-10. You'd be like, oh, is that one of the best quarterbacks in the league? Was he a top five draft pick?
Let me ask you this, because I think a lot of this, right, comes back to our obsession with the draft. And I love the draft, so I'm not railing against it. But let's just say that was Mac Jones doing that. Let's just say they took Mac Jones third overall and Mac Jones was doing that right now. What would we be saying?
Be saying that Mac Jones is awesome, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Sure. Yeah, that's exactly what we'd be saying.
Yeah.
I mean, we would be talking about, oh my God, the Niners are going to have to pay Mac Jones $55 million a year.
Yeah.
Right. So he looks just confident in what's around him, which he should be because it's great. Like how quick the release is, how tight the release is, how just his awareness of everything around him. He looks like, I had a coach tell me this over the summer. I'm sure I've told you this, Connor, but like I had a coach say to me over the summer who knows Kyle really well. He said, you could tell how much Kyle likes Brock Purdy by the way he's calling plays for him last year as a rookie. Right. And the guy said to me, he's like, he was calling the game in a way he wouldn't have called it for Jimmy. And Jimmy was like 5-6 years into the league.
Yeah.
And so I took that to Kyle and I asked him and he agreed. He said, yeah. He's like, I feel really good about Brock. And so, I mean, look, like I think a lot of it is probably draft biased. You know what I mean? Like, I think a lot of it is like we don't let guys live down where they were drafted. And so if Kenny Pickett did that on Sunday, right? Like if Kenny Pickett had gone and done what Brock Purdy did, we'd be talking about how great Kenny Pickett is. Brock Purdy's playing great. And the rest of that roster is outstanding. And the coaching from Kyle Shanahan's offense to Steve Wilkes' defense, I mean, like every bit of that operation looks like he's pulling on all cylinders.
It is. I mean, so the sub question to this then is, and actually, this was a big hot topic this morning at Paul's Diner. I was at the diner this morning, had some breakfast. Nice.
Very Jersey place to
be. I did. Me and my daughter got chocolate chip pancakes and bacon, and I got, I wouldn't be able to do that. I got an omelet with some turkey, some broccoli, and some avocado, and then some toasted rye bread with butter. It was good.
I do miss being able to eat pancakes. If I eat pancakes now, I feel it the rest of the day. So
yeah, it's just not possible. It's not in the cards. Yeah. But so the people behind me were talking about the Cowboys and how they're sort of paper tigers. And I don't know that I necessarily agree, but the facts are that they've blown the doors off the Jets the week after they lost Aaron Rodgers, the Giants in week one in a monsoon, and then the Patriots. Yep. And the Giants and the Patriots might be two of the worst teams from a talent perspective in the NFL right now. So my ask to you then is this a game where you are rethinking Dallas as a legitimate, and I'm not talking about they're going to make the playoffs. I mean, Dallas, they're going to make the playoffs.
No,
but
I mean,
do you rethink them as a possible Super Bowl contender because of what happened in this game?
I still think they have like the top end talent to be in that mix. And I just think the NFC is thin enough where a couple breaks go their way and maybe they get in. Like that to me is like the biggest difference between the two conferences this year. It's not the way the regular season is going to play out. It's like, all right, let's just say for the sake of argument, I'm sure we're going to get this. So let's just say for the sake of argument, Joe Burrow gets healthy again, right? And the Bengals make the playoffs. Now, you may have to beat Joe Burrow, Josh Allen, and Patrick Mahomes in succession to get to the Super Bowl. That's why it's really hard to see someone sneaking up in the NFC, in the AFC, right? In the NFC, like how many things would legitimately have to go wrong for the Niners and the Eagles for the Cowboys to be in that mix? So like if things go wrong for one team, now you're talking about now you only have one of those mountains to climb and maybe you get them in a weird week or they get upset by somebody else or whatever it is. Like I still think because the environment the Cowboys are in, it's not impossible that they get there. They've got enough elite talent, like top end guys, like your Micah Parsons, your CeeDee Lambs, you know, your Dax. Like, so I feel like they've got enough of those sorts of guys and like, I'm not saying that I think as highly of them as I did 3 weeks ago, but I do think that the NFC is thin enough where this can still be a team that contends for Super Bowl. It still could be a team very easily that could break, what is it, the 25-year drought of never getting to an NFC title game. I think it's good enough to be that. But I wouldn't put it in the top group of teams in the league, not whatsoever.
Yeah. It's hard because when you play the 49ers, it's not so much what went wrong. It's just how quickly can you realize that you're just being beaten to death? You know what I mean? It's like, it's so funny to watch that game. It's like,
how long does it take you to realize the exercise that you're a part of right now?
So I think I've used this analogy before, but you know, I'll go to races sometimes and some, you know, if it's a race that I don't care about at all, like a short race that I don't care about, there'll be some USA track and field certified athletes there. And I'll be like, yeah, just let me see what it's like to run with those guys, you know? And so you'll put yourself up at the start line and, you know, you're right alongside them and you're just like, oh, all right. Maybe I'm just, you know, I need to be in the fast group. And then you look down at your watch and you look up and they are 600 miles ahead of you. And you're just like, yeah. Oh man. This is terrible. And then
you're just doing cardio, which is like kind of what the Cowboys were doing for the last,
they were just walking on a treadmill. I mean, that's what they were doing. And it's hard because as much as we're trying to judge Dallas against their prior schedule, it is also, I think, sort of impossible to judge anybody against the 49ers this year because they're so far and away the best team in the NFL. Now, I'm not that guy, but
did we not know this though? You know what I mean? That's the thing about it. Like, that's why I don't want to overreact to last night is like, I think both you and I knew like what the way last night played out was possible. You know what I mean? I don't view what the Niners did to the Cowboys last night as like a revelation or something we didn't know was there, you know? So like, that's why I'm reluctant to really like make any sort of marked change to like my opinion on the Cowboys based on that. Like like, I don't know, like, didn't you feel like that was on the table last night, that sort of beatdown?
100%. I mean, you're dragging yourself halfway across the country. It's a night game against the best team in the NFL. The 49ers are pretty healthy. I think if you're the Cowboys, right, you just want to look at, I mean, the 49ers are putting up points like they're like Oregon trying to sneak into the BCS at the end of the year right now for some reason. But, you know, you look at the effort late in the game, right? It's like, does this team still care? Is this team still trying? And I do think that there were moments, you know, when Dak Prescott, you know, when everybody was making an effort. Now, you could argue, you know, maybe that late game interception where he's just arm punting in the third quarter. It's like, okay, maybe you just want to get out of there and you want to get everybody kind of home without an injury. But I don't know. I mean, I think that there were still moments where I was like, this team still cares, at least, you know, they're still trying. Now, who knows what that'll look like in a couple weeks. But Dallas is one of these teams now where, you know, I think everybody is looking at them and saying, okay, now you guys really got to take it to the Chargers next week, you know?
And I would say, like, one thing about Dallas, and I think it's like a good rule of thumb for anybody who follows the NFL closely, is like, if you're strong on the lines of scrimmage, you're probably going to make it. Like, you're probably going to be able to survive stuff like this. And the Cowboys have had their injuries on the offensive line, but fundamentally, like, the way they're built through the lines of scrimmage, you know. And you look at the players they have up front, both on offense and defense, and, you know, Tyron Smith's been banged up, and, you know, they kept Tyler Smith at guard when, you know, Tyron Smith was out. Tyler Biadasz has been a little beat up. Zach Martin's been a little beat up. They're older. So, like, if they can get those guys, if they can keep those guys healthy, and that's no given, but if they can keep those guys healthy late, and, you know, based on what they've got on their defensive front, with guys like, obviously, Parsons plays up front a lot, and Lawrence and all of those guys, like, I feel like this is the sort of Dallas team that should be there at the end based on their foundation along the lines of scrimmage. You know, I've really, like, the longer I've covered the league, the more I've, like, come to believe that, like, if you're good in those areas, you're probably going to be competitive week to week, even if there's, like, a blip on the radar, like I think what we had last night, you know, sort of was for them. And not a blip in that it was a fluke. It was very real. But just kind of, like, the sort of performance that might cause some other people to jump off the ship.
Speaking of fluke performances, and I'm not labeling this as such, but I am curious your thoughts. Bengals, Cardinals, the Joe Burrow comeback game is here. 36 of 46, 317 yards, 3 touchdowns, only sacked 3 times, a 108.1 QB rating, and 15 catches for 192 yards and 3 touchdowns. Secret to being a good wide receiver in the NFL is strategically complaining passive aggressively. AJ Brown did it 3 weeks ago and has had like 190 yards per game since. Jamar Chase last week said, "I'm always effing open." All right, buddy, 19 targets, 15 catches, 6 zillion yards, and 41 touchdowns. So this was a good timing for the Bengals to win this game just a few days after I wrote and did a bunch of radio interviews on my take, which is that they should shut him down for the season and then get a top 5 draft pick to solve some of their future roster construction
issues. Brock Bowers, baby. Brock Bowers.
Yeah, so looks like that's not happening. Looks like everything's cool. But that was based off of, so, you know, I want to take everybody a little bit behind the kimono here, as Dan Hansis would say in the Around the NFL podcast. And I want to say that, you know, I was asking somebody who was in the training space in the NFL. I was like, you know, how likely is a calf injury to get better over the course of the season? And the person was like, not really likely at all, because you're wearing cleats. It's not like a performance shoe where it's absorbing shock. A cleat is a hard bottom shoe, right? And you have a calf issue, and then that thing is just pounding into your heel constantly, and you're putting a lot of pressure on that. Like, it's going to be bad all season. So it's like, okay, it's going to be bad all season. So Joe Burrow's going to look like he's always looked. Well, turns out we saw him, like, hurtling over guys, you know, jumping over guys, evading sacks against the Cardinals, who are a really plucky defense. And we also saw, I think, a little bit of an adjustment on how he's been throwing the ball. Like, as soon as he hits his step limit on the dropback, he's almost stopping like one of those robot arm pitchers, and then almost like the kid in Rookie of the Year. And then he's just firing it forward. And I'm wondering if there was a biomechanical fix that took a little bit of the pressure off his calf, or, you know, if you just maybe took a little bit of extra strength Tylenol before the game. I don't know what the plan is here, but he looked phenomenal against Arizona. And I think, yeah. you know, if that's about, the case, we're burying the lead here. And that's the biggest story in the NFL this week.
Yeah. You're talking about Henry Rowengardner, I believe. There's the
Hosenbagger. Yeah.
Is that right? Is that right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. So I think I got the name right. I promise I did not look that up.
And Chet Stedman, his mentor.
Wasn't Gary that Busey. It was Gary Busey, yeah. Who was the guy? Like one of the Wet Bandits from Home Alone was in that movie too.
Daniel Stern was the pitching coach. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
The guy with the tarantula on his head screaming in Home Alone. Not Joe Pesci. Joe Pesci would have been a way better Cubs pitcher, wouldn't he?
And Joe Pesci would have, yeah, absolutely. Like kind of like a Kirby Puckett build. Yeah. I thought what was most encouraging about the way Joe played was like that he took some big hits in that game.
He did.
You know, and like the fact that he was able to fight through it. And I sort of like look at this the other way, Connor, which is like, if this isn't going to get better, is this him learning to play with it? You know what I mean? Like, is this him learning what his limitations are? I know I can get away with X and Y, but I can't get away with Z. So I'm going to play that way. It sort of looks like a guy who still isn't 100%, but is learning how to play with his injury a little better. And I know having talked to some of the coaches there that like they felt like the biggest thing that this was taking away from Joe was that he wasn't able to scramble to extend plays and he wasn't able to scramble to pick up, say, third and seven. And we saw him start to do those things yesterday. And this is still a really talented team. And, you know, if he can move around well enough to like, I know one of the things like a lot of teams have been doing to him is sending inside pressure, right? Because the thing is, if you're not mobile, then if you send guys up the A gaps, right? Like then like he's going to have nowhere to go. And if they can get defenses to start to back off on some of that stuff, now we're talking about him getting back into the environment he's been in for most of his career. And I just think like learning to play with the injury is such a big deal for him. And I don't know. I certainly haven't done the amount of work that you've done on this. Like I had no idea about the footwear issue. So I credit to you for learning about how different cleats and how different shoes might affect a calf injury. I was not aware of that, but if Joe Burrow is a full go, then I think the context of the team changes because I do think the defense kind of felt the burden over the last couple of weeks of the offense not being what it's been. And I think there could be like almost like a cascading effect here where if Joe can move around well enough to get defenses to back off, so they're not attacking the offensive line the same way they were, that enhances what Joe is doing, which enhances what Ja'Marr Chase is doing, which enhances T. Higgins when he's healthy is doing, which then is going to affect the run game and allow you to run the ball better. Now you're controlling the ball better. The context the defense is playing in is different. And the whole thing goes back to maybe the formula we've had the last 2 years. And I mean, you look up and everything they've been through, they're one game back in the AFC North, you know? So they're one game back. And it right now looks a lot like, and the Steelers are good. You know what I mean? I think the Steelers will be there in the end, but are the Steelers going to win 12 games? I don't think so. Are the Ravens going to win 13 games? I don't think so.
Steelers are going to win 12 games, 14-12 with like, like 86 Kenny Pickett passing yards, but yes, point taken. Yeah.
The standard is the standard, Connor.
Standard is the standard.
I have really enjoyed Mike Tomlin's press conferences through this. Like, I mean, just, I don't know where that, like he is one of, I want that guy to run for president because he is one of the best when it comes to just coming up with wacky sayings that you would never think of and delivering them perfectly. But he was, I really enjoyed the way he handled the aftermath of the Houston loss. And hey, like no team in the NFL over the last 20 years has responded to a coach like Mike Tomlin's teams have responded to him. And we're way off track now.
We are off track, Albert, because everyone knows the most presidential NFL head coach is Dan Campbell. If you need anybody to lead you through a crisis, it's going to be Big Dan. Maybe Secretary of Defense, actually. Like I would make Tomlin president, maybe Dan Campbell Secretary of Defense, and Who's my vice president for
this? Like, sounds like a great like June 8th podcast is like creating really an entire creating an entire cabinet made up only of NFL coaches.
Pete Carroll's probably your vice president, right? It's like completely harmless.
Who would your press secretary be?
Press secretary. He's the guy that's got to talk to the media all the time. So probably not like Matt Eberflus, you know?
Would it be McVay?
It's like, yeah, guys, we're working on it. All right. You know, all this stuff going on in the Middle East, you know, we're getting it done. Okay. Just, you know, just give us some time, you know, we'll figure it out. But, yeah. So, this is just, you know, I'm bemoaning just a bad week for Connor Roar takes, right? You know, I mean, I picked the Patriots.
Now I'm trying to find a job for Mike McDaniel. It's a dangerous place to be.
This is a dangerous place to be. Just a bad week for Connor Roar takes. Like 4 days after I write, shut Joe Burrow down. It's okay that the Bengals suck for a year because then you can get, you know, maybe the kid out of Penn State and you'll never need a left tackle again for as long as you live. Well, bad take. Bengals are good again. Sorry, Connor. And then the Patriots, who I picked to win the AFC, is just completely crap out. I got to do a round of interviews for that, too, because there were so many people being like, we're going to call you when they're 0-5. And I'm like, haha, okay, they won't be because Bill Belichick is the greatest coach of all time. And yeah, that didn't work.
Here we are.
So here we are. That's life sometimes, you know. The next one we got to get to, Albert, the Jets and the Broncos. And as much as I like to rhapsodize about the misfortunes of the Denver Broncos, I feel like it's a dead horse at this point. The one thing that I would wonder, and so I kind of combine this all into one column. It's interesting that this is happening to Bill Belichick right now, and it's interesting that it's happening to Sean Payton right now. Sean Payton is 10-12 in his life without Drew Brees. Bill Belichick is 80-91 all time without Tom Brady. My thought is, and before everyone jumps to conclusions here, Drew Brees is not Drew Brees without Sean Payton, but Sean Payton is not Sean Payton without Drew Brees. Bill Belichick is not Bill Belichick without Tom Brady. Tom Brady is not Tom Brady without Bill Belichick. I think we all need to understand that. However, if you take those two quarterbacks out of the equation, don't these coaches have to change also? And does it take time for these coaches to recognize that they cannot be who they once were with a generational star quarterback?
Let me ask you, if that's what happens with
Sean Payton.
If we want to extrapolate this, does it that change what you think of Andy Reid? You know what I mean?
I think it changes what I think of Andy Reid because it makes me think that Andy Reid is, I mean, I still think Bill Belichick's probably the greatest coach.
But I mean, like,
I would guess Andy Reid's probably closing ground, right?
Andy Reid, like it does make you think because it's like, all right, like Donovan McNabb was a good NFL quarterback. How great was he? And he goes to four NFC championship or five NFC championship games, right?
He won games with Alex Smith, Michael Vick.
He got to the playoffs with Jeff Garcia when McNabb was hurt. You know,
he's our baby.
I it does make you think about that. Like, it's how many coaches weren't tied to a single quarterback? How many coaches won with multiple quarterbacks? Does it change what you think of Joe Gibbs? You know what I mean? Back in the day where he won three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks, and what an amazing feat that was. Is that more impressive than, say, Chuck Knoll winning four Super Bowls with Terry Bradshaw? You know what I mean? So I do think it does. It makes you think about like what some coaches have done versus other coaches. And it enhances like the way I look at Andy Reid, no question. I mean, I think for Sean Payton, like the interesting thing about Denver to me right now is I almost feel like Russell Wilson, we've talked about this. It's almost like the least of their problems, isn't it?
It is. But here's the caveat that I would say. Russell Wilson is mobile again, which he was not either willing to or was not at all last year. And you can see what a difference that makes. I think he's already run for more attempts and yards than he did throughout the entirety of last season. I want to say, if I'm looking back on that, I know for a fact over the first four games, I looked it up yesterday, he ran more in one game than he did over the first four games of last season. I do think that makes a huge difference in how defenses respect him because they were not respecting him as a pure pocket passer.
I'm 100% with you on that. And I think, unfortunately, like Nathaniel Hackett had to sort of pay for that.
100%.
Because I do think, like, no matter what, Russell Wilson was going to do that. He was going to find out whether or not he could be Peyton Manning. That was like his thing was, I am going to go to a new place. If they won't give it to me in Seattle, I am going to leave Seattle and I am going to get my own infrastructure in the building. I'm going to have my own people in the building the way Tom Brady had his own people in Tampa. We are going to run an offense that I want to run. And I am going to be this quarterback for the next 10 years. And it was either going to work or he was going to fall on his face. But one way or the other, he was going to get that wherever he went, you know? And unfortunately for Nathaniel Hackett, he sort of became the collateral damage in that experiment. And I'm not saying Nathaniel Hackett would have been the next Mike Shanahan in Denver. Please don't. I don't want to hear from people saying, like, I'm just an apologist. But, like, I don't know that Hackett definitely didn't get a fair shake there, you know? And a big part of it was he was brought in almost in the context, under the context. Now, it wasn't necessarily going to be Russell Wilson, but he was brought in under the context. We're going to go big game hunting for a quarterback, and this is going to be the quarterback show. And you're here to help facilitate that.
Yeah. My two-tiered thoughts on this were, you know, first of all, I watched the press conference yesterday and Sean Payton's asked about whether he regrets saying what he said. And he kind of yells at the guy and he's like, I addressed it already. It's like, no, you have to address it again because today's the day. Today's the day that people want to talk about it. So you're going to talk about it again right now because you said it. And I was a little bit disappointed because, you know, he gave that, like, are you serious look to the reporter. And it's like, dude, this is the day. Now we're talking about it. You said that, and then you got another team so fired up. This was such a trap game for the Jets. They dragged their butts halfway across the country into a different time zone, into a different altitude. That game was for the taking for Denver, and the Jets showed up fired up. Robert Saleh made Nathaniel Hackett a captain the night before the game. Everybody was like rip-roaring. They gave him the game ball. They put up 400 yards of offense. That is on you. And you have to address that after the game. I'm sorry, but you have to. And I feel like that's setting a bad example for your team. How are you going to ask anybody else to be accountable if you didn't stand up there? Like Rex Ryan has admitted he's done in the past, where he said, I put a target on my guys' backs. That's my bad. He did that.
Yeah, yeah, and I agree. And I think it'll be interesting to see where the Broncos go from here because they're at a very real crossroads themselves now. And they've got a lot of guys on that roster between, like, they would have value to other teams, like Justin Simmons, right? Like Frank Clark, Jerry Jeudy, Cortland Sutton, Garrett Bowles. Like, where are you at with these guys? And when other teams come calling, are you all in for right now? Or are you building for the future? Are you retooling? And it wouldn't surprise me if you gave Sean Payton's truth serum, if he had, like, sort of already made up his mind that this is going to be a little bit longer of a rebuild than he has let on. And I think you can sense some frustration with the way he's responding to all this stuff now. And maybe part of that is that the team isn't what he thought it was 3 months ago, you know? And I think that's going to lead them into a place where they've got some big organizational decisions to make here over, what is it, 3 weeks until the trade deadline, right? Like three weeks until the trade deadline.
As far as the game goes, this wasn't, I would say, if we're starting in Kansas City and we're saying this was the first game of the rebuilt Zach Wilson era, I mean, there wasn't a ton that I thought really built on that. However, there was the gotta have it third down to Conklin where he dragged like a third of the Broncos defense with him. Then you throw the late pick to Pat Surtain. Like, why are you throwing it the best cornerback in the NFL in that situation? But I do think, like, listen, sometimes progress is not like, okay, you go from X to Patrick Mahomes. You go from, like, gets a little bit better, a little bit better, a little bit better. And maybe by the end of the year, are we thinking of Zach Wilson as like a Matt Schaub, you know, or something?
Well,
like
I also
that, you know?
I also don't think, like, we gave enough credence. And I'm guilty of this too, because I was probably on here 2 weeks ago saying, I don't know how you can go forward with Zach Wilson. I don't know how you can sell him to the team. But then I talked to some people over the last week, and, you know, I talked to Saleh last night after the game, and I I'm starting to understand a little bit more about how massive a reworking of the offense this was. And like that they built an offense. So Aaron Rodgers, for people who don't know this, is a lot like Peyton Manning. Like, he doesn't want movement. He doesn't want motion, right? And that was one of the big adjustments that Matt LaFleur had to go through to coach Aaron Rodgers, because so much of what that Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay, Mike Shanahan system does is based on movement and motion. And so, like, basically what Aaron Rodgers wants, like I said, exactly what Peyton Manning wants, which is like guys in spots, stagnant, not moving. So when they break the huddle, he can look at the defense and he can be the one that adjusts people and he can be the one that moves guys around, right? And so they built an offense like that, which in the spring and the summer equated to all the receivers and tight ends and backs standing still before the play, right? To now, you have Zach Wilson, who's not capable of doing what Aaron Rodgers does at the line in that. So now you've got no movement. So you're not helping your quarterback with that. And he can't leverage the other part of the game because he doesn't have 20 years of experience like Aaron Rodgers does. And you're really putting yourself at a massive disadvantage. And so, you know, one thing that was sort of emphasized to me, you know, in talking to people about this over the last couple of weeks is that it's taking them a little bit of time to put like the motion and the movement and all that different stuff back into their offense and to incorporate stuff that's going to help Zach Wilson. And now that they're doing more of it, Zach's playing faster. And I think you could see it on a couple of those key throws. The one to Conklin you mentioned, there was also a throw in the fourth quarter that he made to Garrett Wilson, where they rolled him out to the right, and then he threw it back across the field to Wilson on his left.
Yeah.
And that was a throw that I bet they couldn't run 3 weeks ago. Like, that maybe wasn't in their offense 3 weeks ago, because so much of it was based on the play action, right? And so much of it was based on like sort of predetermined stuff, where I bet you're not doing that as much with Rodgers, you know? And now they're doing stuff like that, which helps showcase Zach Wilson's arm talent. And I'm not saying again that he's going to be Patrick Mahomes or Josh Allen, but if you can just get competent quarterback play out of him, that's a pretty good team. Like, could that be a 9-10 win team? Maybe. You know, they're 2-3 now. So could that team get to 9 wins? Maybe. And then, you know, I don't want to make leaps here, but then are we talking about Aaron Rodgers coming back in January? It's at least something that,
could
if you're
you?
A Jets fan, you can kind of, huh?
Can you rehab? Can could he theoretically be back in January?
That's what they're saying. So I talked, wow. Sala said last night, like, Sala was like, he is really trying to get back. And so, like, what Sala said to me is he's going to be back in Jersey next week. The reason that he is going back and forth between Jersey and California, one of the big reasons is there's like an aggressive rehab program. I'm not going to pretend I know the ins and outs of that, but there's an aggressive rehab program that he's taking part in. They're doing some innovative stuff with the Achilles out there. And
there's a joke. There's like three jokes.
I know. I'm not saying it has anything to do with ayahuasca, just to be clear here.
It's not a surgery. It's more of an immunization. yeah. It's more of an Achilles immunization. No, I'm
but,
just kidding.
But I mean, it's like, I don't know, like watching that team last night, Connor, it's a really like fast, talented team still, I think, you know, like you watch the Breece Halls and the Garrett Wilsons and the Sauce Gardeners. And I mean, like even the second level guys, like the guys who aren't necessarily the brand name stars, like Quincy Williams making huge plays at the end of that game. You know, DJ Reed is a really good player. Breece Hall, who's what, their third or fourth corner, picking that ball up and running it back for a touchdown. You know, Jermaine Johnson having a sack in the fourth quarter. Like, it's not like impossible to look at that team and say, if they can just make it easier for Zach Wilson and he can operate out there and he can convert some third downs for them. Like, I don't know. You could build the offense around Breece Hall and highlight a really good defense. And here we go, you know, like, and again, like, I still think they're not as good as the Dolphins or Bills, but I mean, if the Chargers struggle, if the Steelers struggle, like, could they wind up, like, you know, maybe sneaking in as the last seed in the AFC? It's not impossible.
You know what? You know, you try to think about, you know, when we're talking about the 49ers, it's like the 49ers are so good that like George Kittle is like their 11th best player right now, which is just bonkers to say.
Just stupid.
But, but like I'm at, in that same vein, like the Jets probably like 13th best player is Solomon Thomas. Like, and that's, that's pretty damn good. You know what I mean? Like Solomon Thomas would probably be like the second best player on the Patriots right now.
Yeah.
I mean, third best player on the Patriots.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, this is a well-built team. And here's sort of my overarching thing. Here's why I'm pulling for the Jets, why I have so much respect for the Jets, because so much of what you do as a coach is perception based. Sean Payton is a genius because Sean Payton is a good coach who worked with Drew Brees.
Yep.
And again, like we said, both of them made each other better. Same with Bill Belichick. Same with a lot of these guys. Mm-hmm. And then you look back and you look at these other guys who are doing good things with nothing, with no one. And Saleh won one of the best comeback games that I've ever seen last year with Joe Flacco against the Cleveland Browns. You know, he's winning games with Mike White. He's staying competitive with Chris Streveler, who before last year I thought was the guy who played the national anthem at the Super Bowl last year. I didn't realize
he's like bootleg Tebow.
Yeah. And I just feel like that is something where I just have so much respect for it. And I think, like, if you're Woody Johnson, how do you not look at a game like that and be like, I have something special here. Like I have a special group of people who didn't give up, who didn't panic. And look at the NFL, man. How many of these other guys would be in free fall, you know, resume sending mode right now after Aaron Rodgers, you know, and just being like, all right, I got to do what I got to do to not look like, you know what, you know, I got to trade for Ryan Tannehill. I got to get somebody else in.
Well, yeah, it's like you remember like the Vikings, like when Teddy Bridgewater got hurt in that freak thing in the practice and they turn around and immediately trade a first round pick for Sam Bradford.
Yeah. Like we have to do it right now because I'm a coach and I have no choice, you know?
Right. Right. And I believe, did they still have Case Keenum on the roster at that point? Or am I wrong about that?
That would have been, we got this machine in front of us
that has answers to these questions. But but that's the thing, is like they may have had like a decent answer on their roster at the time.
No, www.askjeeves.com. All right. And then you have to.
The 2016 Vikings would have had
Sam Bradford, Taylor Heinicke, and Sean Hill.
Okay. So, I mean, it's a little bit of a different situation, but you go.
You had Taylor Heinicke. You had the taxpayer.
You did. But I mean, it is one of those, like, you know, like they very easily could have buckled to the public pressure. And they threw their weight behind Zach Wilson and they said, no, we don't care what everybody said. And you know, in New York, like there have been coaches before that have done dumb stuff because of public pressure. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Every single one of them before Saleh.
You know what I mean?
Well, maybe Adam Gase didn't. That team was just bad.
Yeah.
And then
Gase was so defiant. Like he didn't care about the public pressure.
He didn't care about public pressure.
Like instead of kneeling to public pressure, he got into like feuds with like media members. Like,
I think Adam Gase would always just be like, hey,
Adam, but it was like,
It's like, hey, Mike Maccagnan, can I get like a good player? And he's like, sure. Here's Le'Veon Bell for $60 million. And he's like, all right, thanks. Cool. But yeah, no, I would say he didn't. I would actually say Todd Bowles was pretty good. I don't think he ever caved under pressure. Rex, as good of a coach as he was, did ebb and flow with public perception.
He rode the wave.
But I do think that there was also a humility in that where he would recognize that other people were right and had some good ideas. Anyway, here's all I'm saying. It would be so much more impressive to me for the Jets to make the playoffs this year based on all the circumstances and to come out of this. It's so much more of a measure of a coach that Zach Wilson comes out of this successful and the Jets find some measure of success than like, say, even if Sean Payton goes 500 with the Broncos, because you already have somebody who's shown to be a capable NFL quarterback. You know what I mean? Like you have the built in. And so I don't know. I thought this was a nice game for the Jets. It was a momentum builder. It was a season shifter. I listened to part of this on the radio, which was really nice, just old school. And Bob Wischusen killed it, man. I don't know if you know Bob, but I love Bob, the voice of the Jets.
No, I don't know Bob.
Bob Wischusen also likes the band Fish, just like me. But he is.
Oh, you know what? Did you know? Like, you know, one of the guys from Fish from my high school, right?
What?
Yeah, Mike Gordon's from my high school.
What?
Yep.
Oh man, you guys wouldn't have gone to high school together, right?
No.
He's a little bit older than you.
I'm not that old, but yeah,
he's quite a bit older than you.
Yeah. So Mike Gordon and then Chris Evans, who's Captain America, and Jeremy Strong, who's the guy from Succession.
Damn.
We have a weirdly So Jeremy Strong, God, what's the guy's name? You know, the main character in Succession.
I don't watch. I'll just say that my TV viewing habits. That sounds cagey. I'm not watching weird illegal things. Like, I just don't watch a lot of TV that everybody else watches.
Yeah. So Chris Evans who's Captain America, was a year behind me at Lincoln Sudbury, and then Jeremy Strong, who is in Succession, I'm pulling his name up now. This is bad because I do like that show. I haven't gotten that into it, but he's the main character in Succession. He was a year ahead of me. His dad was one of my little league coaches. And I'm trying to find, he's in The Big Short too. Anyway, but yeah. So Mike Gordon from Fish, and they might be Giants, which is a less famous.
I know that band. Yeah.
But they're all from my high school.
They did the theme song for like a famous TV show. Yeah, it was like Malcolm in the Middle or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, they definitely did the theme for a TV show. I just can't remember which one it was.
Okay. Yeah. Let me Google, and then we're going to get into the lightning round here. Abington Heights High School famous alumni. let's see here. I know we got everybody. I know we had Amber Jacobs. She played in the WNBA. Yeah. She was really good.
We also had the fourth. We also had the fourth overall pick in the 1991 NFL draft.
Wow, yeah. Who was that?
Mike Kroll, who was the defensive rookie of the year, playing for Wade Phillips in Denver, but was like a freak athlete, but was like not all that. He's a good guy. He's like just wasn't like as blood and guts passionate about football. Wound up like playing like 4 or 5 years in the league, I think. Then went to NFL Europe, and now he's like an artist out in California.
Oh, wait, hold on. We had Corey Spangenberg. I know Corey, so that's weird, but he was the,
that's weird.
I know him, but he went to my high school and he was the, let's see. Where's his draft status? He was like the 10th overall pick in the 2011 MLB draft out of the Padres. Okay. Nice. So that's not bad. We also have an adult video award winner, an AVN winner from my high school. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
for those wondering, Jeremy Strong is Kendall Roy in Succession. So that's his character in Succession. I just looked that up.
Thanks for not asking me to go down the rabbit hole on the AVN nominee at my high school. I don't know anything else than that. I'm doing a quick Google here.
Everybody knows Google searches are great podcasting, as we're proving here.
I think we have kind of a robust lightning round this week, Albert, because, you know, I think we kind of touched on the big ones here.
We did.
And, you know, so we can kind of just start rolling through here. Minnesota and Kansas City, you know, It's tough to analyze Chiefs games. It really is. Like, it's just like,
it feels like I liken it to where the Patriots used to be, where it was like they used the first half of the season to kind of work everything out. You know what I mean? Like, and they've got the flexibility to do that because they know they're going to be there in the end. And so like, if I'm a Chiefs fan, I'm probably just paying attention to how guys like Rashi Rice and Justin Ross are coming along. You know what I mean? Like, I think that that's what the early part of the season is about for them, where it's like, how are your young players developing? What you have around Patrick Mahomes is the defense, with the defense, all the second year guys and third year guys you have there, are they ready to take another step when it really counts? Like, that's what I'd be analyzing them from. For, I actually think my biggest takeaway from this game is like, even though the record's not there, Like, I just think the Vikings, like the way they play, it feels to me like this has like been a, again, I know the record's not there, but they play hard every week and they go toe. They
have been in a lot of games.
They went toe to toe with the Chiefs. And it feels like everything that they're doing and the way that they're staying locked in, I just think there's a really bright future there with the guys that are in charge. You know what I mean? Like, I think those guys really know what they're doing. And, you know, the way they've handled some of the veteran players they've had to offload from the roster and how everybody there seems to be locked into the program. And then, you know, I think like the fact that you've got some guys that you're going to be able to build around long-term and Justin Jefferson and Christian Darrisaw. And I just really like where they're going, you know, and it may be a couple of years before they're really where they need to be, but I know for people in Minnesota, the record's probably frustrating after last year. I think they already have as many losses as they did all of last year, right? I think that there's a ton of reason for optimism watching where the Vikings are on a week-to-week basis.
Do you trade Kirk Cousins before the deadline?
Not unless I can get something great. I mean, I don't know.
Like, second-round pick.
I would think about it. Would you?
Yes, right?
Yeah,
why not?
Why? Yeah, I mean, the only reason why not is because you have to make sure that what you have behind him on your roster you're comfortable with. You know what I mean? Like, do you feel like you can win? Like, do you want to get a look at Jaren Hall? As silly as that sounds, just because he's a rookie, do you want to get a look at Jaren Hall and seeing what he can do? Do you feel like Nick Mullins is enough to sell to your team? Like, because you know this as well as I do.
Captain,
like,
comeback Nick Mullins. Call him by his full name.
I mean, the one thing that you got to be careful about with these things, and I know, like, we all like to play general manager, but like, players don't care about your 3 or 4 year plan. You know what I mean? Like, they want to win now and they want to be competitive now and they want to produce now, because that's going to, you know, dictate where their earning power is, where their careers are going. And I do think that's one thing, like in a situation like this, where you look at it and you say, if we trade Kirk Cousins, does that send a bad message to our locker room? Does that mess up like some of the goodwill that we've built up here over the last year and a half? Are you putting guys in the roster and their careers in a weird spot by doing that? That'd be my concern. Does it poison things with Justin Jefferson at all as you're trying to negotiate a long-term contract?
Trade him too. I'm kidding. Why not? I mean, I'll
tell you what too, like, one just quick thing, like, Jordan Addison looks like he can really play too.
I was just going to say that when you're talking about like Vikings players who make up the bedrock of this team. I mean, he's good. I mean, they nailed that. He was solid.
And you throw Hawkinson in there, like, they've got a good skill group to build around. Like, I think the line's going to be good long-term, like with, you know, Darrisaw and O'Neal at the tackles. Like, I don't know. I think I still think the future's really, really bright there. It might take them a year or two to get back to where they want to be, but I think the future's really bright with those guys.
So bright, we got to wear shades. Los Angeles and Philadelphia, like, you know, this is.
Can I ask you a question?
The Eagles are 5-0. Yeah, yes, you can ask me a question.
Did it seem like there was like an FU element to running the brotherly shove yesterday to you?
Yes. Of course. I mean, look at who their head coach is.
They kept doing it though. Like, they were like running it on like 3rd and 3. There was one of them. I don't know if you saw this one, but there was one of them where it looked almost like they were picking Jalen Hurts up, like he was doing a keg stand almost, and like kind of carrying him through.
Yeah.
Did you see that one?
Like, yeah, they're just like make us stop, you know?
Yeah.
And we're not going to.
It just feels like they've heard the criticism and they're like, okay, guys, you know what we're going to do now? We're going to run it on 2nd and 6. Let's see what you do then.
That's a great college. We might have talked about this on the podcast, but NCAA 1997, 1996, it might have been. If you could run a QB sneak from the goal line formation against the computer, because the computer wouldn't play goal line defense. The computer wouldn't match the formation.
Right.
And so
right.
You would just line up in a quarterback sneak from the goal line, and, you know, you're at the 40-yard line, and so the computer defense would be running like a nickel. And then so you just gain like 13 yards of QB sneak.
And you have like Scott Frost at quarterback. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Frosty would just be pounding it down the field, and all of a sudden you're up. Although I'd never play with Nebraska, because I felt like I there was no pleasure to me in getting a college football video game and then playing with like,
Ohio State.
You know what I mean?
You had to take a team. Like, so because I went to Ohio State, I would sometimes like play one season when I first got the game with Ohio State, but you always had to do dynasty with like, you had to take like the
Northern Illinois, Western Kentucky.
You could do that, or you would take the bad team in a power conference. You know what I mean? Like, I think I took Colorado to a couple national champions,
Southern Miss.
So you could say I was like sort of the precursor to Deion Sanders.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, I was the guy who kind of revolutionized Colorado.
Yeah. I've always thought of you that way.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was what I was known for. And then like, I mean, like Kentucky would be a good one. Take Kentucky in the SEC and bring them to glory. You know what I mean?
North Carolina was fun. Because they had the uniforms, and you were in high school when I was in elementary school, and I hate to keep pointing that out to everybody, but you know, back then the North Carolina jersey was probably peak in terms of style at that point.
Oh, was it the one with like the shadow numbers?
Yeah,
like it was the Carolina blue. And then I had the white numbers with like the navy blue like shadow numbers, right?
And then like that cross thatching, like the diamonds or whatever.
Yeah, diamond pattern. That's on the basketball shorts, right?
Yes. And so it just looked so cool. And, you know, so that was always a big thing. And maybe like Duke was kind of fun sometimes.
Taking a basketball school and taking a basketball school, Kansas, taking like a basketball school and building it into a football power, basically. That was the idea.
Yeah. The Eagles, by the way, are 5-0, Albert, and I have to do my power rankings, and I have no idea where to put them, you know, because I think if they played the 49ers right now, the 49ers would blow the doors off of them, but I don't know. I mean, is this team going back to the NFC Championship game this year? I mean, are they that good?
I mean, they're so deep on the lines of scrimmage, and I don't want to turn this into like an offensive line podcast, but like, I sort of feel like they are, you know, it's like all the things I said about the Cowboys on steroids, because of how balanced and deep they are along each line of scrimmage. And you said it earlier, like, it's like, oh, we have Fletcher Cox and Jordan Davis. Let's draft Jalen Carter. Right. We have all these interior linemen. Okay. Let's draft Landon Dickerson. And then let's draft Cam Jurgens. You know, like they've just put so many resources into the lines of scrimmage, and you're starting to see the passing game come along. I did think you saw some things, especially with how they've highlighted AJ Brown the last couple of weeks. To me, the last piece of it is going to be how like the back seven of the defense comes along. Like, I think that's the last piece for them, because I don't think the linebackers and safeties have been quite as good this year. With the loss of TJ Edwards, with the loss of CJ Gardner-Johnson, with the loss of Marcus Epps, like they haven't been quite what they were at those positions. And then the corners are getting a little older, you know, with Slay and Bradbury. So, you know, that to me is like going to be sort of the deciding factor here on whether or not they wind up being the team they were in January or February of last year, is how does their back seven on defense come along? Because I think pretty much everything else is in place.
Steelers, Ravens, another real shootout here in the AFC North. I think that I love the idea that you can just get one Kenny Pickett to George Pickens bomb and it just destroys it. Like, it's a backbreaker.
Yeah.
This was probably the first time that I've seen Baltimore really uncomfortable this year, which is a testament, I think, to what Todd Monken's done there. I think that Lamar Jackson missed some throws in this one. There was I thought he had a touchdown to Zay Flowers. I believe it was on the first drive, and there was sort of a miscommunication there. But I would still kind of view the Ravens as the class of that division right now.
Yep.
Even though, you know, we don't know what's going on with Deshaun Watson. And I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, you're going to lose these games to the Steelers. You're just going to. It's just going to happen.
Yeah, you know, and I talked to TJ Watt after the game, and you know, like Tomlin showed them clips all week of like old Steelers Ravens battles, and you remember what that was like. Those were awesome, like back in the day. Like the first Steelers Ravens game I was ever at was 2008, and that was when like Ray Lewis hit Rashard Mendenhall so hard his like chest caved in and he was out for the year. Like, and it was like on a play right up the middle, like where like Rashard Mendenhall came in a little high and like Ray Lewis just made him pay with his life for it, you know? And Like I do think, like, just listening to TJ talk about it, the whole idea of Mike Tomlin doing that, and Tomlin's the best at this, it's like knowing what his team needs, was we're going to muck this game up and we're going to make this game messy. And in the end, we're going to win the fourth quarter. And that's exactly what happened. You know, like the way that they're able to kind of create havoc with those two edge guys on defense and Watt and Highsmith. And, you know, you see Joey Porter coming along and making the play there in the end zone in the fourth quarter. It's just, I feel like that was sort of the formula for the Steelers. And you got to give Kenny Pickett credit because he hasn't played great, but he's able still to summon that when it matters most. And, you know, I think like one of the things that's encouraging watching the Steelers is they do have a lot of good young players, like a lot of young players that are ascending in your Pickens, in your Freiermuth, in your Joey Porters, Highsmith still relatively young. Like they have a lot of like players where it's like, you could say that guy's going to be better in December than he is right now. And so I still have some hope for the Steelers, you know, especially based on the way they closed out last year. Like, I think, yeah, I still think that's the most balanced division in the league. And the Bengals, if all things are equal, the Bengals are the best team in the division. But I think that division, it could be one of these years where three games separates first place and last place.
Yeah. We're at the George Pickens is a star portion of the season too, which is very exciting. I mean, that guy is just unbelievable.
He's silly. Like if he can keep his head on straight, like, holy crap, he can be something. The way he pulled away on that touchdown from Marlon Humphrey, where he's just, I don't know, like you saw like that gear he seemed to find when the ball was in the air, you know, like they were even. And then he just like, it's almost like he put his foot on the gas and it was just like the meet me roadrunner thing. Like, and like all of a sudden he's like 5 yards past and was unbelievable.
My only other observation here is that Mike McDonald is the defensive coordinator of the Ravens. You know that, Albert. I just, you know, just in case anybody else doesn't. He leads the league this year in absolute clock cleaning sacks. Like, that guy has dialed up some kill shots this year. He is very fun to watch. And just kind of one of my favorite, watches.
I remember Mike McDaniel well from 2021 when he came in and changed the Michigan defense and got Aiden Hutchinson some clean shots on CJ Stroud and broke a certain winning streak. So I know Mike McDonald's scheme pretty well.
It all comes back to the Buckeyes. Giants, Dolphins. Look, the Giants are who we thought they were. They, you know, you and I have said this week after week, and now you deal with a Daniel Jones neck injury. And I think the problem with that is that it derails all of, from an organizational standpoint, if Daniel Jones can't play a lot of football this year, it saps most of the season of the overarching purpose, right? Like, okay, maybe you hope that Jalin Hyatt plays better. And there's some guys that you want to develop. Maybe you hope that Evan Neal gets right by the end of the season. But other than that, you're teetering a little bit on lost season territory.
Yeah.
I think if you're the Giants, because again, I mean, they were a bad team last year. They knew they were a bad team last year and they got hot. They played better than they probably should have, you know, and they got the Vikings in the playoffs and the Vikings.
It's similar to the Vikings.
Yeah,
like, I think they mirror each other. And I think you can give the Giants credit for the same thing that you give the Vikings credit for. And then I don't think that they've really overreached outside of like the Daniel Jones thing. Right. Like, which is,
but even then it's essentially a 2-year deal.
Right? And we've talked about that. Yeah. So like, I still think like you can look at the way that Brian Daboll and Joe Shane handle the offseason. And it's like, yeah, they just signed some of their own guys. They signed Dexter Lawrence. They signed Andrew Thomas. They signed Daniel Jones. And like, other than that, like what did they do? They like traded a fourth round pick for Darren Waller. They signed Paris Campbell. Like all the moves they made were like, we're not there yet moves, right? Like let's make it work for right now. We're not there yet moves, which I look at that as like a sign of self-control, you know, a sign of, we know we're not there yet, a sign of this is going to take some time. And as encouraged as everybody should be, by the way, 2022 went for the Giants. Like, I feel like you should almost be more encouraged that the people in charge didn't do something stupid and go all in on a roster that wasn't good enough. And so I think now they'll come out of this with clean cap. They'll come out of this with a full complement of draft picks next year. And, you know, a real shot, I think, with some higher draft picks next year to turn the corner with a new younger group.
My Dolphins note here, I thought Tua played
really fast.
I thought Tua, especially after, you know, like Buffalo, where they challenged him a lot on his first reads, I thought that the Giants kind of, again, presented some difficult looks to him. And I thought he played well off schedule. I mean, it wasn't, it's not your Tua six touchdown game, but I do think that this is little evidences of progress and maturity that I think you look for. And, you know, kind of overall nice Giants game. Indianapolis, Tennessee, just sucks that Anthony Richardson is hurt. I mean, it's just unfortunate, you know.
I it's hard to talk about this because, you know, you don't want, I mean, it's a guy's health, but it does make you wonder, like, it is so hard to hold up playing that way when you're incorporating a quarterback in the run game that way. And I think sometimes we look at like these guys physically and you just make the assumption, okay, well, you know, he's a massive person, so he's going to be able to hold up to the punishment. It doesn't really work that way. You know what I mean? Like there are just some guys that can and some guys that can't. And this is a guy who was hurt at Florida, right? Like, so there is some history of this and you just have to wonder, it's like, he's such an exciting player to watch. But is like, I mean, he's come out of every game so far, right?
Yes. He was hurt in the opener. There was the concussion game. And I think he was checked for a concussion in the opener, I want to say, against the Jaguars. He actually got a concussion. Now the AC joint thing, which is, you know, puts him out for about a month. And so, I mean, listen. Shane Steichen just keeps winning. I think that Tennessee and just the kind of the plotting nature of that offense and the fact that the Colts defense has been playing tough. You know, okay, you'll give up 13 completions or whatever it is to DeAndre Hopkins. He's not going to destroy you, you know? And I thought they, you know, this was the right opponent for them to have, but also Shane has been coaching really well with a very unpredictable quarterback situation.
So what if I ask you the same question about the Titans that you asked me about the Vikings? Do you trade Ryan Tannehill if you're the Titans?
Yes, you have to at some point. But here's the difference. I still think the Titans because I think the playoffs.
The difference between the Titans to me and the Vikings is the Titans actually have two relatively highly drafted quarterbacks on the roster, right? Like, whereas with the Vikings, it's like, you're not really getting anything out of, all due respect to Captain Comeback, you're not really getting a whole lot out of playing Nick Mullins. And Jaren Hall was like a lower round draft pick. You know, there would be some benefit organizationally to getting Malik Willis and or Will Levis out there to at least get a look at what you have as you plan going forward.
I think it would help, especially while you have DeAndre Hopkins, who's an absolute completion machine. Yeah. And is really good for just high volume, you know, move the sticks kind of stuff. It helped Deshaun Watson out immeasurably or in the early years of his career. And so, you know, maybe you give it time. Although I think Vrabel probably thinks he's never out of it. And I don't think that the Titans are even close to being out of it.
No. And I put Vrabel in the same category I put McVay in when I went after everybody for thinking that the Rams were going to tank earlier in the year. Like, no Mike Vrabel team is tanking. You can get that out of your head. I think Mike would tender his resignation to the Titans organization before he would be a part of something like that.
Vrabes would suit up and play quarterback before he let his team, his team tank. Texans and Falcons, 21-19. So, you get a
CJ Stroud again. I do think CJ Stroud's like one of my, like, would have to be like the way that he came back, the touchdown throw he made. It's got to be one of your takeaways, right?
It's got to be. Oh yeah. I mean, you know, I think at this point it is widely accepted that he is far and away your rookie of the year leader in the clubhouse right now. Based on the circumstances, based on what we thought going into the season, based on the progress from the preseason, I think he's far and away a star. But I mentioned last week, and I do think that, like, this entire Texans team is playing really well. I mean, this defense is playing well. They are getting a lot out of this roster. But I also think on the flip side, this was a very good Desmond Ridder game after a couple bad weeks, you know, 28 of 37, 329 and a touchdown. This was the kind of game that he needed. I thought he played, I thought he played really well.
Yeah. And he's another guy I talked to after the, after his game. Like he's so level-headed. Like I think it's like a decent thing. It's a decent gamble by the Falcons. Just throw him in there and see what becomes of it, you know? And I know that there were a lot of people calling for him to be benched, like coming out of the way they played in London and why are you even playing him and all of that stuff. Like, but I think if, you know, watching the 2021 quarterbacks this year should teach us anything, is that we shouldn't be assessing these things on a week to week basis. Like coming out of the first couple of weeks of the season, we would have been like, all right, like Mac Jones looks pretty good and Zach Wilson and Justin Fields are terrible. And here we are 3 weeks later. And you might say the opposite now, you know, it's just going to be, there's going to be ups and downs with young quarterbacks. And so, you know, I think the Falcons having a guy in there who they know is going to do the right thing and finding out physically whether he has it isn't a bad place to be this year as they wait to figure out where they're going to go all in on a quarterback, you know? And so I think Ridder played great down the stretch. That throw to him, he made to Drake London to set up the game-winning field goal was outstanding. And you can see, like, you know, sort of the same way, like, with Brock Purdy. Like, I think one of the things that's great about Purdy is that, like, and I've had people, you know, the Niners, you know, talk about this too, is like how at Iowa State, he sort of had to be Superman. You know what I mean? Like, it was like, when you're going up against Texas or Oklahoma, you're going to be out, man. I sort of think like Desmond Ridder is the same sort of thing where he went to University of Cincinnati and like he had to be the man, you know what I mean? Like he had to help carry the program and he was part of really getting that program like Purdy was at Iowa State to a higher level than they've ever been before. So he's really comfortable in these situations at the ends of games. You know, I think that that really does show up and you can see it out there more so than maybe you would from a quarterback who went to an Alabama or an Ohio State or where you maybe you don't have to be the best player on the field on a down to down basis.
Lions and Panthers. We are, I guess
the maybe... Lions are real, man. Like I don't know. To me, like this was a good one to look at because it was like, this is like the way a powerhouse operates. You know what I mean?
Right. Like you just crush bad teams and you have like Aiden Hutchinson picking off screen passes, right?
Yeah.
You know, you have a lot of these little moments where you're just, they're just not blowing the doors off of guys. They're flexing the depth of the talent and like Sam LaPorta. I mean, you know, David Montgomery, like this team is getting the most out of their guys and they're also accentuating it. And by the by, I mean, this was Jameson Williams' first game back and he had 2 yards on three targets, two catches, 2 yards. I mean, that guy's not even in the fold yet. This offense is going to get better. It's going to be scary.
And I think like one thing that's so impressive is just the way that when they even get threatened a little bit or when their back is against the wall, like how they just go into bully mode. You know, and I think it was really evident in the opener in Kansas City when they had the ball. There was 2 minutes left and they just gave the ball to David Montgomery 3 times inside, 5 yards, 2 yards, 3 yards, game over.
Yep.
And then against Green Bay, whatever, 11 days ago, the Packers mount a comeback and it gets to like 27-17. And then they go on like a 14 play drive. And they're like 11 runs and they rip like 7 minutes off the clock and the game's over. And there was a similar drive yesterday where the Panthers cut the lead to, I mean, whatever, 35-17 to give themselves a puncher's chance. And the Lions went like 75 yards in 7 plays and 6 of the plays were runs. And the last 5 plays were runs. And it's just like, it's, you know, what's so impressive about it, Connor, is like, Did I say this last week? Because I may be repeating myself. They built exactly what they said they were going to build. They did exactly what they said they were going to do. And so, like you said, like it's just it's this team like now that's imposing as well. And I think we all thought coming into the year, it's like, oh yeah, they could win the NFC North and be like the third or the fourth seed, and you know, in the in going into the playoffs, host a playoff game in the wild card round? Are they maybe more than that?
Maybe.
Like Super Bowl? Are they as good as the Eagles?
Give me one more week. I need a little bit more sample size.
Okay.
That's the smart guy answer. It's always give me more
sample
data.
Sample size.
Nice game from Bryce Young, though. I think he's getting there. But I we can't evaluate this stuff on a week to week basis, or else, I think you fall victim to that. Last one, Jags, Buffalo. Only person at the MMQB who called that one. Jacksonville owns London. 38 minutes time of possession. They put up 474 yards on that Bills defense that shut down the Dolphins. This is such a weird week to week league. But Jaguars and Colts tied for
first. The London Jaguars
2-0. That's it. Say goodbye, Jacksonville. You had your chance. But this was, I mean, we talked about this last week. This was the get right game the Jaguars needed to get back on track, to reassert themselves. And, regardless of how the beginning of the season has gone, they're tied for first place in the division and all is theoretically well.
Love the throw that Trevor Lawrence made. Like, I think it was a 3rd and 4 with the game on the line to Calvin Ridley down the right sideline. He actually checked to that too, which, I mean, like, I think you're starting to see like the big game, Trevor, like you're starting to see. And I think you've seen it like over the last, maybe like going back to last year, maybe like the last 10 to 15 games where in the big spots, he makes these gigantic throws. And that was certainly the case with the throw that he made to Ridley down the sideline. That, of course, led to the big touchdown run at the end that put it away with Travis Etienne. Does this make you change your mind on Buffalo at all?
No.
I don't think so.
It's the London game, honestly. I mean, I traveled to London once and I felt like shit for a week. So,
And you two are a finely tuned athlete. So,
yes.
I would say Milano is a big loss.
It is. I think their defense is in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, like losing Milano and White back-to-back weeks, it's just if I'm them, I'm in the market. I hope that like Kyrie Elam can come around and play like a first-round pick, and maybe that helps me replace Tre'Davious White, because the truth is, like, it sucks, but you really haven't had Tre'Davious White full-time in a few years. If I'm the Bills, I'm probably in the market for an off-ball linebacker. So maybe before next week's show, we can scour the rosters of the bad teams to try to find one for them.
I'm in. Like I said, I'm available. Albert has kind of revealed the big secret of this podcast, which is that I'm a great athlete. I will play for the Bills. Albert will play for the Bills, former high school quarterback here. We got a lot of talent. Producer Shelby, we're deep. Here at the MMQB podcast. But thank you guys as always. Thanks to Albert for joining us live from Foxborough. Be sure to check out everything that Albert wrote in his Monday Morning Quarterback column. We got a ton of stuff at SI.com. Subscribe to the magazine too, you nerds, because it's great. And be sure to check out Matt and Gilberto on the Thursday show later this week. And see you guys soon.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.